This episode of Harvey Brownstone Interviews is brought to you by the Harvey Brownstone Talk Show Blend Coffee, available at HollywoodBlends.com. Everyone's saying it's the best coffee they've ever tasted. Why not give it a try and see for yourself?
Hello, everyone. I'm Harvey Brownstone, and today's guest is a beloved actress from England whose show-stopping portrayal of Mrs. Patmore on the iconic television series Downton Abbey and the two feature films that followed has contributed enormously to the popularity and success of that wonderful show. She and her fellow Downton Abbey cast members received three Screen Actors Guild Awards for outstanding performance by an ensemble in a drama series. But beyond Downton Abbey, our guest has done much, much more in her remarkable career. On stage in London's West End, she played Rosie in the original production of the international smash hit show Mamma Mia. She originated the role of Kath in Our House, based on the music of Madness. She played Little Buttercup in the revival of HMS Pinafore, and she originated the role of the nosy neighbor Auntie Annie, not only in the play East is East, but also in the multi-award-winning 1999 film and in the sequel West is West. On television, besides Downton Abbey, she's appeared in dozens of series, miniseries, and TV movies, including The Practice, The Lion, The Witch, and The Wardrobe, Staying Alive, Casualty, Shameless, The Bill, Heartbeat, Hot in Cleveland, The Catch, Beecham House, and many more. And you may also recognize her as Aunt T from a series of TV commercials for Tetley Tea. Our guest is also very well known for her dedicated service to several important charities. She is a UK ambassador for Animals Asia, which is devoted to ending the barbaric practice of bear bile farming and to improving the welfare of animals in China and Vietnam. She's also an ambassador for Medical Detection Dogs, which trains dogs to detect human disease and to assist people to manage complex medical conditions. I am delighted and honored to welcome the wonderful Leslie Nichol to our show. Leslie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for asking me. I'm honored. Thank you.
I understand that your mother was a television star. So was she the one who inspired you to become an actress?
I think she'd forgive me for saying she wasn't exactly a star, but she was in at the very beginning and she did all kinds of weird and wonderful things. She would do live television. So when I was about three, I vividly remember this very glamorous woman, you know, in a fur coat and her red nails, looking beautiful. She'd leave the house first thing in the morning. My poor dad was left to kind of try and handle this three-year-old all day, cook for me and everything. And then later on in the evening, I'd see her on the television in the corner of the room. So I think that was the first time I was aware that there was something that, like that going on. And she did all kinds of things. She did the first panel game in the UK, which didn't actually continue, but she was the first person to do that. And then she later on became a supporting artist, and she was very happy with that. She just liked dressing up and being in the studio for the day. So I guess I saw her from a distance, but it was actually my doing a poem at school when I was 11 and horribly shy that made me really think, oh, this is something I've got to do. I really want to do this.
Well, look at the career you've had. I mean, on the stage, doing musical theater, starting with Mamma Mia, you played Rosie and your big solo number was Take a Chance on Me, which was the comedy highlight of the show. You must have had so much fun doing that.
Oh, yes, it was fantastic. I mean, I've had a weird career in terms of musical theater. My second job was Jesus Christ Superstar in the West End. I got that simply because my friend was the musical director and I was terrible at auditions. And he just rang me up one day and he said, do you want to be in Jesus Christ Superstar? And he sort of walked me into that without having to audition. He knew I could do it. He knew I could also screw up the audition. So that kind of was my first West End musical. Then there was a huge gap before Mamma Mia. Mamma Mia was 2000. So in the 80s and 90s, I did musicals all around our repertory theatre system in the UK, all kinds of things. I played the mother in Tommy. I used to say I'm Anne Margaret without the legs because I know you've spoken to her. She's very beautiful and has very long legs. But weirdly, out of I don't know where, I think an actress friend recommended me to the musical director. Suddenly I was in Mamma Mia year two. And it was, that number was phenomenally good fun. Doing the show was good fun. I mean, here we were, three women in their 40s, late 40s, strutting around the stage in platform boots and Lycra. And it was, you know, we do concerts here at Wembley. It's like playing Wembley or one of your big stadiums in your middle years. It was wild. And it was, and there were so many people coming to see the show. There was never a seat available. And we had crazy people in the audience, like Cher and Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks. They'd all heard about it. They were all circling around. So it was phenomenal, exciting time. Yeah.
Well, although you've done a lot of musical theater, you've said many times that you are an actress who sings and not a singer per se. But you've done everything from Jesus Christ Superstar, as you mentioned, to ABBA, to Gilbert and Sullivan. How many actresses who sing can say they've done all that?
Well, all I can say, Harvey, is I think when I'm with musical theater people and they call them, you know, the triple threat, where they have a phenomenal voice and they can act and they can dance. My dancing is quite ropey, so I usually make it funny and I've got away with it. So in the right stuff, I can be fine, but there are plenty of the, you know, other things that I mean, Phantom of the Opera, I wouldn't be any good to them because I don't have that kind of voice. They require, you know, properly classically trained, although I was trained, but not as a sort of, you know, opera sounding voice. It's an actress who sings. But yeah, it's just finding the right thing. I could do ABBA and I could do rock musicals, but there's plenty I couldn't do.
Well, there's a lot you can do, that's for sure. Now, before I move on to Downton Abbey, I can't resist mentioning that back in 2018, I got to see you here in Toronto playing Mrs. Hannigan in a wonderful production of Annie. Did you enjoy that experience?
I did. I blooming did. Yes, it was very good fun. Again, I joined the West End company. They'd been on in London and they asked me to come to Toronto, which was fabulous because I think I'd filmed there, but I'd never spent time there. Oh my gosh, what a great city. What a great city you have. But the only thing that was missing for me, because I'd been in London before that doing a show at the Donmar Warehouse, which was great. I loved that. Then I think I was doing something else. And then I had to go straight to Toronto. And I at that time lived in LA with my husband and my two dogs. And I was just going crazy not having the dogs with me. So my agent talked to the producer who wanted to extend and put me back because we were doing good business. And he said, I think Leslie will extend if you could possibly help her get her dogs to Toronto. So in the end, I hired a friend of mine who was a long distance lorry driver to drive them from LA to Toronto, spent the 12 weeks with me, and then he drove them home again. So that made it perfect.
I'm glad you had, well, after all, Annie had her dog. Why shouldn't you have yours?
Lucky to begin with, between you and me and everybody listening, the theatre manager wasn't too sure he wanted any dogs in the theatre. And the producer said, there's a dog in the show. He went, oh, yes, that's right. Okay. And the dogs worked with me. It was fine. Yeah.
Well, I want to talk, of course, about Downton Abbey. You know, when I was preparing for this interview, I was trying to remember the moment when I fell in love with Mrs. Patmore. And I think it was when you said to one of your kitchen staff, listen to me and take those kidneys up to the servery before I knock you down and serve your brains as fritters. How did you keep a straight face during some of that dialogue they gave you?
I was very lucky because he seemed to give our wonderful dame Maggie Smith the kind of posh upstairs jokes and I got the downstairs ones, really. And in fact, when you're right, they were funny. And when we finished this TV series, my beloved Sophie, who plays Daisy, she put them all in a frame and she had it done. So all Mrs. Patmore's sayings, memorable sayings, are in this frame because we used to laugh so much, you know, every time I came out with another one. I said you could go for a drink of water, not a trip down the Nile, you know, that sort of thing.
You know, it seems to me that the two characters on the show who had the best, most wittiest lines were the Dowager, played by Dame Maggie Smith, and Mrs. Patmore. Do you think Julian Fellowes was picking up on some aspect of your personality when he was writing the dialogue for Mrs. Patmore?
Well, I don't know, really, because I do have quite a big sense of humour. I don't know which comes first in a way, but anyway, I'm not as witty as Mrs. Patmore. I mean, some of her lines were truly fabulous. And what I loved is that a lot of them have biblical references because, you know, she may be just a lowly cook, but she's self-taught and I'm sure she's self-educated and you know, she's God-fearing and she's not stupid. And she would know about the Bible and references, things like that. So, not to be underestimated, I think.
Well, that's for sure. Now, there's a question I've been dying to ask you, and it's this. Given that the name of your character was Mrs. Patmore, was there ever a Mr. Patmore?
No. Apparently, women in this sort of situation at that time were all called Mrs. It was a sort of term of respect. And so they might have been married, but often they weren't because the way their lives were, it didn't really lend itself to going out and finding somebody to marry. So in my case, I'm quite sure Mrs. Patmore was never a married lady.
I'm glad we've cleared that up. Now, a lot of people may not realize that for all those years that you played Mrs. Patmore, you did not wear any makeup, which is very unusual, isn't it?
Well, I would beg for a bit of mascara, you know, but that's about all I had, a base and a bit of mascara. But actually, I like that because I'm not a big fan of seeing makeup on faces where they shouldn't be any. I mean, interestingly, the girls upstairs, who were all very beautiful in their own right, got a bit more help, but you could do it subtly. But with my character, I mean, you know, what's the point of doing anything like that? You want to see the face and you want to see it as it would have been with all its warts and all.
We love that face.
Well, I used to wear a corset at the beginning. I managed to get rid of it halfway through. And I swear to God, I look completely round. I mean, I look like a little hedgehog. I look like a little round animal. I don't know how that ever happened because I was squeezed into a corset. People used to say, oh, gosh, you wore padding. And I said, no, I didn't. That's me.
Well, you're perfect. You know, when I look at the enormous popularity of the Mrs. Patmore character, I believe that the on-screen chemistry between you and Sophie McShera, who played the scullery maid Daisy, was pure magic because it was kind of a mother-daughter nurturing relationship. I understand the two of you became very close friends.
That's exactly what happened. If you see the very first episode, I'm screaming at her. Mrs. Patmore is not very likable. She's quite fussed. You know, she's kind of aggravated and a bit unkind and all of that. And that's what he had in his head. But from the minute I met Sophie, plays Daisy, from the very first minute, I was absolutely besotted. I love that girl. We're very close friends and always will be. She calls me Telly Mummy. I know what happened was Julian saw our chemistry, which was real. And she also saw the sense of humour that we have, which is a shared sense of humour. And he took it in a different direction, and which was glorious, because when there's a scene, I remember doing a scene where I think she's threatening to leave, and Mrs. Patmore gets very upset. And we had to do it quite a few times. And I mean, it was so easy to do, because all I had to consider was what would it be like if that human being left my life? And it would be awful. So, it's genuine. And I think people smell that, don't you? I think people know when things are not fake.
I think that the sincerity and the authenticity that the two of you brought to the scenes you had together were so powerful. And I'm very impressed that Julian Fellowes picked up on that friendship and incorporated that into his writing.
That's a good writer, isn't it? He did it with several characters. When he was talking to Alan Leach, who plays Branson, Alan at the audition had come with a good Yorkshire accent. He's Irish, of course. And they said, "You're Irish, aren't you?" And he said, "Yes." And he said, "Would you read it in Irish?" So he did it. And he was a bit disappointed because he'd worked so hard to get his fabulous Yorkshire accent. And what happened was when he read it in Irish, it sparked a whole lot of interesting ideas for Julian to take that character a different direction altogether, you know. But I'll tell you one thing about going back to Sophie. The one thing about Sophie McShera is she's incapable of doing anything that is not 100% truthful. She just can't do it. Do you know what I mean? She is such a good actress. And she just, That's why you, I think that's why people warm to her, because there's nothing fake about her. She's just truly authentic. She tells the story. There's no vim-vam. She's just straightforward and has a huge heart. And I think you get that. You feel that with her.
Oh, you absolutely feel it with her. And we feel it with you. I mean, your acting is seamless. I remember reading somewhere that Phyllis Logan, who played Mrs. Hughes, was the funniest person in the cast. Is that right?
I would say that. We were often asked who's the funniest, and people would say this person or that. I swear to God, Phyllis Logan is by far the funniest. And I'm leading a campaign to do some sort of comedy with her, because I would love to do that, because she is hilarious. And she's had an amazing career, Phyllis, but people don't know her as a comedian. They don't know her as a, they don't, haven't seen her funny bones, but she is hilarious. She had a couple of little alter egos that she will never do for anybody except us. But when we were sort of hanging around with nothing to do, she'd bring out these characters. And they were genius, honestly. They were absolutely genius. Yeah.
I'd never, ever have guessed that. Now, besides Sophie McShera and Phyllis Logan, yeah. I understand you were also very close with Paul Copley, who played Mr. Mason.
I adore Paul Copley. Yes, yes, absolutely. What? And I also adore Jim Carter, who, in fact, we, between us, he comes and helps us with our gardens, because Jim is a gardener. So there's a television program in this country called Ground Force, which is when a team of gardeners come around. So we call him Ground Force. He was here the other day looking at spring bulbs for me.
What a wonderful guy. Now, over the 6 years that you were in Downton Abbey and the two movies that you made, were you happy with the story arc that Julian Fellowes created for Mrs. Patmore?
Well, I think the thing about this job is it wasn't a job where you go and discuss your character with the writer, because it's a huge ensemble, as you know. There were 18 of us to begin with. He wouldn't have time for all of that. So I think we learned early on to just sit back and just be grateful for whatever comes along. I mean, it's not in my interest to start making up stories that I'd love to tell, because it's not my job to do that, if you know what I mean. So I just very, very happy to be in it, and I'm very, very happy to play Mrs. Patmore, and I always will be. I think we might be doing one last film, so then it will have to be goodbye, and that will be awful.
I heard there's another movie coming, and there's lots of buzz within the industry about it, but is it for sure?
I can say I think there might be.
Leslie, there's a very definite distribution of power downstairs at Downton Abbey between Mr. Carson, Mrs. Hughes, and Mrs. Patmore. Did the three of you ever talk about how to convey the dynamics of that power distribution in your scenes together?
That's a really good question. Actually, what happened on the first and perhaps the only day of rehearsal we had was at the very beginning, we had a historical advisor who was on set, and he got us all the servants to stand in a line in order of importance. So Mr. Carson was at one end and Daisy was at the other end, because she was the lowest of the low at that point. And so it went Mr. Carson, Mrs. Hughes and me. But then he made the point. He said, Mr. Carson is, as it were, the head of downstairs. Mrs. Hughes is next. However, Mrs. Patmore is the most important in the kitchen. In that particular area, she is boss. So it was an interesting kind of weird scene or two about a little struggle of power at the very beginning between Mrs. Hughes and Mrs. Patmore, because Mrs. Patmore had to ask for keys to the cupboard or something, I think, to get some ingredients out. And she really was fed up about this, but that's the way it was, because the housekeeper kept the keys. So, yeah, there were, funnily enough, the downstairs is as strict and class-ridden as upstairs, really. They were very kind of sure of who was who and where, who belonged where and who did what to who. It was already something that you had to learn and adhere to, you know.
Well, Mrs. Patmore was definitely the queen of the kitchen.
But you will notice she never did anything technical, because I, at the time, had never been anywhere close to a kitchen. So I remember saying, don't get me to do anything that people will go, she can't do that. So I just did a lot of stirring, and I would take things and I would shout. Now, I've seen that, we've all seen that on the TV, haven't we? Well, certainly here with the chefs, the TV chefs, that's all they ever do. Don't see them do anything really tricky. So I stuck to that. And then I thought, I'll be on safe ground.
So you're not really a very good cook?
Well, funnily enough, my circumstances have changed. When I first started, I was married to a wonderful man who was a wonderful cook. And he cooked all our meals. And I was a very insecure cook, so I let him. I was thrilled. I'm sorry to say he died 2 years ago. And a bit before that, I started veering towards being a vegan, which he also wasn't. So I had to go and learn. And I've actually quite enjoyed it. And when I was in LA, I started vegan cooking classes in LA. And I suddenly realized that actually it's quite good fun. And, you know, you just have to try things and some work and some don't. But I quite like it now. Yeah.
Well, I'm very, very sorry to hear about the passing of your husband. And I'm glad to know that you are carrying on. You know, I have to tell you, Leslie, as a gay man, that I was very impressed with the way the Thomas Barrow character was developed throughout the run of the show and in the movies, because we shouldn't forget that homosexuality in those days was a serious criminal offense. The Thomas Barrow story was an important part of the legacy of Downton Abbey, don't you think?
Three more. I think my favorite part of the movie is when we follow Thomas to the gay club and he gets arrested and he's sort of flirting with the idea of letting his heart be free and be who he is properly. I love that he did that. And I thought Rob, who plays Thomas, was phenomenal, don't you? I thought it was heartbreaking and wonderful to follow that story. I'm so glad it was in there because you're right, those were terrible, difficult times for gay people.
He's a tremendously gifted actor. He's not gay himself, but he somehow found a way to convey the pain, the anguish that many of us can relate to even now.
Yes, I know. It's funny, when I talked about the play I did in London earlier, the Donmar Warehouse, that was a play called The York Realist, which is a phenomenal play. And that also is about two young gay men, but way, way back in sort of 60s maybe, or even earlier. And in a farming community, one of them is from London and one of them's a farmer. It's about their relationship and about their utter fear of being found out and what their families will say and all of that. And I have to say, including Ian McKellen, not to name drop, but he did come and see it. The older gay men were really moved by this story because it brought back so much real pain, real awful memories. Yeah,
I can certainly relate to that. It resonates with me. You know, when I think about what made Downton Abbey such a phenomenal success, I think it was because the show had so much heart and was about kindness and loyalty and decency and respect, don't you think?
I absolutely agree with you. Absolutely, 100%. Yeah, I think, and I think it's important to tell those stories just to remind ourselves that these are the things that, you know, we should hang on to. These are human beings at their best, or they're all trying their best. It's funny, I've just done a drama called Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, and it's been a huge big deal in this country, and it's being shown on PBS at the moment in the US, and I don't know if it's coming to Canada or not, but that is also, it's a true story about, they're called sub-postmasters, people who work in the post offices around this country, were wrongly accused of embezzling money. And of course it was all lies. It was a faulty computer system. Anyway, we told this story at the beginning of this year. These people have been fighting to clear their names. Some of them went to prison. It's a shocking story. They were told they were the only ones that were complaining about the system. This has been going on for nearly 20, well, maybe 20 years, slightly more. It's blown up in this country. The government's involved, you know, people are demanding that they're cleared and that they get compensated properly. And that also is a very powerful story about people being wrongly treated and about good people, you know, being abused in a way that's just unforgivable. And it's about kindness, really, that's required. We require that of each other, to be kind, to be forgiving, to look after each other. Sounds a bit of a cliche, but it's true, isn't it?
It certainly is, and I'm very glad you mentioned that. For the benefit of our viewers, the miniseries is called Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, and Leslie Nichols plays Pam Stubbs, who was a post office branch manager falsely accused of theft, fraud, and false accounting. Let me ask you, what kind of preparation do you do when you're portraying a real person?
Well, first and foremost, you say, can I speak to her, please? Which thankfully she was completely fine with, and I went over to see her several times because I don't know that I've ever paid a real person before. So it felt like a huge responsibility, obviously, to tell it properly. I mean, I wasn't doing an impersonation of her, but I wanted to try and figure out what this experience had done to her. And it's truly shocking. This is a very, very sort of bright, robust lady who weirdly also lost her husband just at the beginning of all of this. So she was battling this one on her own. I mean, they took the keys off her. They locked her out of her place. She said, I used to lie awake just scared that somebody was going to break in because she kept all her paperwork. She was frightened that they were going to come and try and take her stuff away so that couldn't be used against them. She said, I was frightened for years. And I don't know quite if you can really recover from that in the end. You know, she's seen that there's a light being shone on the story and that people are being cleared, but it's left some terrible scars on people. Four people committed suicide. Four of these people who were wrongly accused committed suicide. It's unbelievable.
It is really an epic story of the justice system gone wrong. And I really do think that there's a reason why that story is resonating with so many people.
Also, it's international because when we first did it, we didn't think for a second it would come over your side. But then it's David and Goliath. It is about people have gone straight to people's hearts. And that's what drama can do, isn't it? Because people were aware of it-ish in the papers, a little bit here, a little bit there. But if you do a good, proper drama with truth and authenticity, and the writer did a phenomenal job of compressing all these stories and complexities into four parts. But if you do it properly, then drama can get people emotionally involved and then they're engaged 100%. And then things happen and they are happening, you know.
So. Well, I must confess to you, since we're talking about authenticity and appealing to the public, I have shared an idea with Julian Fellowes that I didn't run by you first, but I have an idea for your next big project.
Yes, bring it on, Harvey.
I'm one of those Downton Abbey fans who wants to see a spin-off series starring Mrs. Patmore, who leaves Downton Abbey and opens her own restaurant or inn. If you were approached to do that, would you be interested?
Yes, if I can bring Mr. Mason with me.
Yeah. Well, yes.
And so, Sophia, Daisy, of course.
And Daisy, I think that is an obvious spin-off, and I don't know whether Julian Fellowes will ever answer my letter, but I'm going to keep pestering him.
Bless you. Well, goodness, you really did get in touch with him.
Well, I got in touch with his people.
Love it. Thank you.
Yeah, I think he needs to know that there's a groundswell of fans who really see, of all the characters in that show, the best, most likely opportunity for success would be a Mrs. Patmore.
Wow.
Well, so we're going to work on that.
Yes, please. Can we have a petition?
Now, soon after playing the kind-hearted Mrs. Patmore on Downton Abbey, you took on the role of the monstrous gangland matriarch Sybil Griffiths in The Catch. What was it like shifting gears and playing someone so very different from Mrs. Patmore?
It was fabulous. I mean, it was really, I got loads of makeup. Do you remember, I got tons of makeup and hair and everything. No, it was amazing. It was one of those peculiar things that just happened. I just moved out to Los Angeles. There's a lovely guy who was the sort of showrunner on The Catch, and he'd wanted to get some British actors into it. And John Sim, who's one of our very best, was hired as one of these gangster people. And he was talking to, I think it was Michael Engler, who is a wonderful American director who directed the first movie and some of our series, TV series. And I think Michael said to Alan, if you want some more Brit, I mean, Leslie's moving out in a minute, you know, if you want it. And he said, oh, she could play John's mother. So fair credit to them. I mean, it was very different, and I don't know how they knew I could do it or anything. But anyway, I couldn't get there fast enough. I mean, I could not believe it. It was such a shock. I mean, completely the opposite of Mrs. Patmore in every way. So I love that. I mean, how lucky was I to do that?
Yeah, you have demonstrated incredible versatility, and you've also done a lot of voiceover work in shows like Sarah and Duck, Harvey Beaks, Goldie and Bear, The Tom and Jerry Show, Jellystone, Alice's Wonderland Bakery, and I'm just naming a few.
Yeah, well, that's a weird one as well, I'll tell you. It's funny how this job works. In England, I barely did anything at all. I think Sarah and Duck was a lovely animation for little ones. And I played a scarf lady on a regular basis. And that was fun. But apart from that, nobody was interested at all. I never did anything. But as soon as I got to America, I just met the right voiceover agent. And they kept putting me up for sort of loopy British women. And I seemed to get them. So that's where that started. I mean, that's one of the most brilliant things that happened with me living in LA for 5 years or a bit longer, because that did develop and I can still do them from here, which is great. I love doing them. Absolutely love it.
You've got the perfect voice for that. In fact, I think if they were ever going to do the Beauty and the Beast again, you would be perfect for the Angela Lansbury voice.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, you would have been perfect for that. Now, a few years ago, you and Mark Muller, the songwriter, wrote a one-woman musical show about your life and career called How the Hell Did I Get Here? It was nominated for an Off-Broadway Alliance Award. You did the show in a number of cities, and then the tour was canceled when we lost your dear husband, Darbs, in 2022, which is so sad. Do you have any plans to revive your one-woman show?
Well, in September, Mark and I decided to get about 50 people together, find a little space in London, you know, in the centre of London, and revisit it in a much more simplified way. I, in America, we had a set, you know, we had a tour planned. We were going to San Francisco and Pittsburgh, and we'd already done Chicago, and we were in the middle of a run in New York, but it was more complicated. And we said, why don't we just have a go at doing it again? Just me, it's me, it's Mark playing the piano because he won't let anybody else do it, which is really sweet, and some photographs. And also we had to address the fact that I, because my husband's in it, very much so, as sort of the man I finally found who was my soulmate after lots of terrible boyfriends and stuff, I finally found the love of my life. And I said, well, I'm going to have to say what happened. And that was another test, really, was what will happen when that bit comes? Will I be able to do it? Well, the answer is I did. I mean, I said what happened. And it didn't derail the show, and we carried on. And so it was a kind of a test. And now we're just dipping our toes to see if we might be able to put it on in London. But the point about it is, it's now called On My Way to the Abbey. We've got rid of How the Hell Did I Get Here? And as I say, we've simpler. It's really very simple. It's really me talking to you about me. But the point is, what it does is it sparks things in people's minds about their own journey. And that's what it's meant to do. It's really not meant to be the Leslie Nichols show and all of that. You know, it's just, I had a mother that gave me certain issues and problems. I talk about that. I'm a couple of terrible boyfriends. School, terrible shyness when I was little, awful, paralyzed with that. So it's all stuff that people relate to, or they know somebody who has had that, whatever. So it's meant to be entertaining, but it's also meant to give people an experience where they sit down and just consider what's happened to them. And that does seem to happen. So I would be sad if we let it just disappear.
Oh, don't let that happen. Don't. I tell you, I would imagine that the challenge in writing an autobiographical show is that you have to find stories and life lessons from your own experience that the audience can relate to. Was there something therapeutic for you in doing that?
Well, the whole experience of writing it was a first for me because I'd never written anything. And that was down to Mark Muller, who is a very experienced songwriter, has been doing it all his life. hugely successful, you know, has a wall of gold discs and was a big deal in Los Angeles, based in Los Angeles. And we were friends. And I mentioned one day I kind of was interested in doing something, but something I could do, as in not a cabaret, because there are wonderful cabaret singers and I'm not a cabaret singer. I suppose I'm a storyteller, but I thought if I play my cards right, he might write me a song. Well, he came and joined forces with me, and actually wouldn't have got written without him because he's experienced as a writer and he just powered through. But he sort of, his light went back on. I think he'd got a little bit jaded with the pop industry and he was a little bit asleep, and this just woke him up and he could not stop writing songs. So it was amazing. What would happen was, I'll give you an example. One day I said, you know, the thing is, if you've been around for a few years, what happens is there's always somebody in front of you that gets the job, and it, you know, you're plagued by that person. It was a sort of a joke, but it's sort of true. And he said, who's yours? And I said, oh, Julie Walters, because Julie played Rosie in the Mamma Mia film. I was seen for Mrs. Weasley in Harry Potter. She got that. And, you know, and indeed, Harry Potter was full of famous people, which I was not at the time. And the next day he came back with a song called "That Damn Julie Walters Is Stealing All My Parts. She's the one who makes me suffer for my art." So that's what would happen. I mean, he was on fire, absolutely on fire. So I think we've got 9 of his songs now, and they're brilliant. They're absolutely brilliant. So it was just fortunate meeting of two people who sparked off each other, and he taught me a bit about writing. So it's made me want to do more. I don't know if I could do it on my own, but I just really enjoyed the process. Yeah.
I think that's brilliant. I hope you bring the show to America.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yes, it would be awful for it to just disappear. I mean, it wasn't meant to disappear. It was an awful, terrible tragedy, and I couldn't continue at the time, but a lot of love has gone into it. So it would be sad if it just disappeared, I think. Yeah.
Leslie, do you feel the love that people have for you? Do you get that you really are very beloved?
Well, I guess so, but it's never something that, you know, that I take for granted. It's very touching. It really is very touching, because who doesn't want to be loved? And also, I suppose it means something about your work gets through to people, touches them in some way, and that makes me very happy. Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that, because you have a way of conveying warmth in a unique way, because of the authoritative character that you've been required to play all those years. The warmth that you showed Daisy translated to us in the audience, and we all fell in love with you, because, you know, the kitchen is the heart of every home. And you're the heart of that show. And so I just hope you know that through all the terrible boyfriends, and then finally finding your soulmate, and then losing him in such a tragic way, I hope you know that there's enormous love for you out there.
Thank you.
I'm also fascinated by your work with Animals Asia, promoting compassion and respect for all animals, especially the bears that are being killed for their bile. I understand you've been to China at least 4 times, right?
I've been to China, and I was in Vietnam for the second time last fall. And actually, the thing about the bears is they're not being killed. They're being tortured. It's even worse than that. They're captured and they're crammed into tiny cages so they can't move. And they might be there 20, 30 years. Oh. And they stick something into their gallbladder to remove the bile. Historically, that's been used in traditional Chinese medicine, and it does have, you know, it does work. But you can make bear bile, you can make the bile out of herbal alternatives. So there's absolutely no reason to do that to an animal. And so it's, but you know, that came from Downton Abbey, amazingly. I think I saw, while I was in Downton Abbey, I saw something on X, Twitter, whatever. It was a video of a bear plopping around in a swimming pool in Sanctuary, happy. And I burst into tears, and my husband and my niece were there, and they said, "What's the matter with you? He's a happy bear. Why are you doing that?" And I went, "I don't know. I don't know." But something hooked my heart big time. And that's why I've been, for the last, whatever it is, 12, 15 years, been absolutely devoted to Jill Robinson, who started all of this, and to the organization. And initially, I said to them, if there's anything I can do, will you just tell me? And they said, well, actually, 160 million people in China watched Downton Abbey at that time. So they said, actually, if you come over, if you get yourself on a plane, which I did, you could probably raise awareness for us. So me and my husband got on a plane, went over there. And the thing is, people say, oh, you're a great thing you're doing. What a wonderful thing you're doing. You say, well, thank you. But who gets to go backstage at a bear sanctuary and become part of a family of people? Talk about kindness. Their logo is kindness in action. And that's around everything they do. Those bears are looked after with love, respect. They're given toys, medication for their pain. And very quickly, those bears become trusting. And I don't know how they can cope with being near a human being, because all they've known for years is cruelty. But somehow they turn things around. And Jill says they teach us everything about forgiveness. They just do. I mean, it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And it's wonderful to be in that community. You don't want to leave, because you think, why can't the world work like this?
Amen to that. And I have to say that I'm so glad that I had a chance to ask you about that, because in my opinion, there's a special place reserved in heaven for people who protect animals. Yeah. And I want to thank you for the work that you're doing and the awareness that you're raising for this very important issue. I have to tell you, Leslie, it's been an enormous pleasure meeting you and having this chance to chat with you about your amazing career and your life. Thank you so much for taking the time to appear on our show.
Oh, thank you for being so kind and generous. Thank you. It's been lovely, really lovely.
You are welcome to come back anytime. And if by chance there happens to be another Downton Abbey movie, I hope you will come back on our show to promote it.
Yeah, you betcha. Of course. I'd love to.
And bring Sophie.
Oh, yeah, my little Soph. Yes, I will.
Thank you again for being on our show.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Our guest has been the one and only Leslie Nichol. My name is Harvey Brownstone. Thank you to my producer, Steve Silver, my director of programming, Robert Monaghan, my PR directors, Eileen Shapiro and Jimmy Starr, and my entire team at the XBTV One Network in the UK. Thank you all for joining us. See you next time.
Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out all the great interviews on the Harvey Brownstone Interviews YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell to be notified when new videos are posted.